Welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and this is my podcast.
Hello. How are the listeners doing today? You know, it's interesting that we tend to call ourselves what our actions are. Like, I'm calling you a listener, but you're not just a listener. You're a human being, or a dog, or a cat, or a rabbit. Or a bird, or a robot, whatever, whomever you are, whomever, right? Is it whomever? I know my mother would know this rule. It's whomever, but sometimes you say whomever, and it's not correct. Like, to whom are you speaking is correct, but whom are you speaking to is not. Ending a sentence with a preposition again would be looked frowned upon. Is that right? That doesn't sound right. And I say, it would be looked frowned upon. It would be looked frowned upon. I keep saying the same thing over it. But we're not just listeners, are we? Well, a lot of the time, we multitask. There's probably not one person. I don't want to assume, but I would imagine that people who are listening to this podcast, the few, the proud, I'm not going to say it. It's, if you're not American, the slogan for the Marines is the few, the proud, the Marines. But I would imagine that you're multitasking, and what are you multitasking? What are you doing? What tasks are you multitasking? What? Yeah, sounds redundant. Maybe you're doing a crossword puzzle or Sudoku. Maybe you're on Facebook. Maybe you're reading the New York Times. Maybe you're driving. Maybe you're taking a walk. I think that we've sort of come to a culture where people are expected to be doing more than one thing at a time. And I don't know how I feel about it. I do it. I'm constantly doing something. If I'm on the phone, I'm probably driving because it's one of the only times that I have to call people. And of course, I do have hands free, but, you know, it's not, I'm not paying attention 100% to the road. Or maybe I'm walking around a grocery store aimlessly searching for the one item they don't have. Why? Because it was on sale last week. Organic coconut milk, $1.69. Can't beat that price. And I didn't beat the crowds because I got to the grocery store and they had none left. So we sort of, I don't know if thrive is the word, but we cultivate a culture. Is that redundant to say cultivate a culture? We live in a culture where multitasking is just the norm. I think that towards if I'm speaking in relation to what my goals or my values are, I would like to be able to be in the moment. And in order to be in the moment, to be present, I think I just need to strip away ancillary activities while I'm doing my primary activity. Of course, it's not what we do. We were designed to be able to do more than one thing at once. We have multifunctions, different parts of our brain even. I mean, we can eat and carry on a conversation. We can drive and listen to music or a podcast. But it's just interesting that we don't, I don't even know if condone is the word, but we don't appreciate in this culture just doing simple tasks one at a time. It feels like, I mean, when someone says, oh, do that, it feels like that's meditation. And it could be. I mean, what if I simply just took a walk? I didn't listen to anything. I didn't purposely try to walk somewhere. Just going for a walk. Taking in nature. Taking in the people around me. If there's people. If I'm walking in the park in my neighborhood, there will be people. There's always people. You know, some people, and I've never understood this, some people listen to music on speakers as they're hiking through nature. It's like, I saw the last time I went for a walk, somebody had outfitted their dog with a Bluetooth speaker and they were playing hip-hop out of the dog. I mean, the dog was essentially a hip-hop station. And ooh, you hear that? That's a loud motorcycle. Now, when you're riding a motorcycle, I think it's darn near impossible to do too many activities, because, I mean, in California you're allowed to split lanes, so motorcycles are constantly weaving in and out of traffic, accelerating, decelerating, looking out for drivers who are obviously multitasking and therefore not able to pay attention fully to their surroundings, unfortunately. And that's how a lot of motorcycle accidents happen, because of the people around them. Some other motorcycle accidents happen because motorcyclists can be really stupid. I saw this guy on the highway. He was driving down the 110. I was coming back from the airport. And he just was probably going about 70 miles an hour. He just popped a wheelie and rode like this, I would say, for probably a mile at 70 miles an hour on one wheel with his front wheel just straight up in the air like he was a 12 o'clock boy or something. To those of you who don't know, the 12 o'clock boys, I believe, were some sort of biker gang in Atlanta, was it? That they would just ride their motorcycles, and they would all ride on wheelies the whole time. And someone made a documentary about it, and I watched it at some point. I don't remember why or how, what led me to that. You know, we get up in the morning, and if we get up in the morning, And we've got a lot of things planned out, but there's always things that come up, right? Like, who was it? Did Jan use the phrase, something suddenly came up? Also, there was, I can't remember. There's a made-up character in the Brady Bunch. And when you're trying to make up a person, you say this person's name. It's a made-up person, but I can't remember their name. You know, the Brady Bunch really, I think, had a unconscious influence over societal norms to those who watched it. Yeah, it was like pretty new stuff happening with all these sort of non-nuclear families and, you know, dealing with someone else's teenage children and this and that. How do you make it work? Well, you love a woman, you love a man, they've got three kids, they've got three kids, how do you make it work? Well, you have Alice. Alice found love. She had Sam the Butcher. And then, of course, there was Jinx. And Jinx was like a bad omen. You did not want to be around Jinx. Jinx would just get you into bad situations. I'm trying to think of the name. It wasn't Adam, was it? No, I can't remember. Anyway, I feel like when I used to watch television, or, you know, when I can, and it's few and far between now, but wow, some television deserves to be watched in a movie theater. I mean, it is cinematic, well written, beautifully shot, amazing soundscape and editing, acting. It's just, it belongs in a movie theater where you can pay full attention to it and you can hear the sounds as they're meant to be heard and see the story unfold on a large screen so you can actually, you know, become involved with it. I think that we do ourselves a disservice by trying to watch things on these little screens, these iPhones and Androids and even iPads and stuff like that, you know. And I understand it's convenient. It's very convenient. But, you know, what actually could be the new thing that people do, and I think it's very budget friendly too, because I've actually utilized one, but you can put on those virtual reality headsets and become completely immersed in what you're doing. Therefore, you are paying full attention. There's a film and there's no distractions. You've got earphones and eye goggles on, and there are no distractions. You can concentrate on it, unless your brain distracts you or some sort of outside activity distracts you. But other than that, you can just watch it. And I think, you know, there's a lot of that kind of television out these days that you just need to fully pay attention to it, because, for instance, I ripped through The Queen and I thought, okay, it's fine. But I realized while I was watching The Queen, I was scanning and shredding because I'm going paperless. Well, I went paperless. Now I have a little bit of paper, but I'm going to get to it. Even though I called cable company, I think at least five times, and told them I want to go paperless. They keep sending me paper. So I finally, I think, was able to deal with that. But, you know, we're watching these stories and missing half of it, or at least three quarters of it, or a quarter of it, right? Because apparently the Queen is all about these sort of side looks. That's the whole, that's not the whole thing, but, you know, you miss Queen Elizabeth sort of side glancing at Charles, and it's, the scene doesn't make as much sense. I'm just hearing it and occasionally glancing up because I'm doing too many things at once. But really, if I'm doing two things poorly, then is that really getting me closer to what I want to be doing? Or am I just aiding one of the activities to make it less tedious? I mean, scanning and shredding is not fun. It's like doing your taxes at a pool party. You may be having more fun, but you might miss some stuff. So I do have to watch. What was that big spike? Oh, was that the, that could have been the microphone bopping. Maybe I can get rid of that. Here's the thing, though. You know, I think that if we give ourselves enough time, and time, that's one of these, I know that we have to adhere, because we need a collective agreement on power and lifespan, essentially, right? So we create money, we create time. Time is money. Money and time, I believe, are two songs off of Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. I could be wrong. But, you know, I think that we're getting into this culture where people value those who can do as much as they possibly can in the shortest amount of time. Like, there was a study that Americans oh, just coughed. Probably need some water. You know, it gets really dry when I'm cooped up like this. Turn off all the fans, close the windows so there's no extra noise. And then I'm talking for an extended period of time. And here's a door closing. It's my neighbor, Gian. Gian. Not John, Gian. He's moving out, moving on to greener pastures, as they say. There's this study that Americans actually look towards social status as people who are busiest. That's who they believe have the highest social status. For instance, you know, you just you look at people's tweets or Facebook posts, and they're like doing this thing, doing that thing, doing this thing, doing that thing, and they do like 10 things a day. It's either they're busy, I mean, busy, but not too busy that they can't keep posting every however often, 10 times a day. Or they're not busy, but they want people to believe they're busy. I mean, if you want, you can call it facade book, because everyone's putting on their face, right? Everyone wants to be seen a certain way on social media. And I think that the people who want to be seen as very busy, doing things all the time, they want people to see their status. It's a power play. I mean, unconscious or not, you know, I think that it's certainly interesting that in this day and age, when it seems that so many occupations are about to be obsolete, that we still have this sort of, I'm going to say, archaic interpretation of what status is in terms of how busy you are. They did the same study in Italy, and you know, they thought the opposite. They thought the people who just sit around and do leisurely things, they must have status because they must be rich enough to afford not to be able to do anything. And so they look at that as high status. Now, we know that rich people in this country are constantly doing stuff. They're going on cruises, going on helicopter rides, they're going to premieres, going to Cannes, they're going to the moon, whatever they're doing, you know. Shopping on Rodeo Drive, they're buying a new, not Mitsubishi, what's the other one? Not Mercedes, what's the other one? Yeah, what's that one? Maserati, the one that Joe Walsh talks about. Apparently, he got his up to 185 miles per hour, and a police officer pulled him over. He may or may not have gone to court, may or may not have gone to prison, but the punishment was that he was no longer allowed to carry a driver's license. So, because he's very rich, he was able to hire a limousine driver. But he knows that people who covet the riches, you know, possessions, or they want things from them, he has to protect himself from those people. So he securely fastens himself in the back of the limousine. There's probably a more poetic way of saying that. But, I mean, in short, his Maserati goes 185. He lost his license, and now he can't drive. He got a limo and rides in the back. He locks the doors in case he's attacked. But life's been good to him so far. You know, there's certain status symbols too. There's like the rock star, and the rock star is supposed to keep busy with partying and drugging and rocking out and having a crazy lifestyle, and the movie star is supposed to be busy with going to premieres and parties and doing movies and this and that and the other, you know. The reality is that everyone has the exact same amount of time in a day. And, you know, if you break it up, if you utilize it properly, then you can get a lot done. Yes. I think that you get into a not an argument, but a discussion between a debate against quantity and quality. So you can do so many quantitative things. You can probably, if you did, you know, one thing per hour in a day, let's say you sleep 6 hours a day, you're up for 22. Oh wait, you wouldn't be up for 22. Now the door closed again. See, Gian is busy. He's busy moving out. Taking multiple trips. No, if you slept for 6 hours a day, you'd be up for 18. So you've got 18 hours, and let's just say you do one thing per hour. So you exercise for an hour. Let's say that you have to shower and groom, you have to eat, you have to drive. So let's just say all that knocks out, I don't know, 4 hours. So 4 hours, you still got 14 hours left, right? So, you get what I'm saying? You know, if we really want to measure our life in coffee spoons, we can. Well, I think that term actually means something different. Isn't it a T.S. Eliot quote? I'm going to have to look that up. Maybe it's teaspoons. He was British, so he probably drank tea. But I drink coffee. And when I drink coffee, I'm usually doing multiple things at once. In fact, the way that I like to drink coffee is not leisurely at all. I like to have it at a cool enough temperature that I can just drink it all at once. That's how I like to take coffee. It's almost like taking a shot of espresso, but much more liquid than a shot of espresso. May be the same amount of caffeine. I don't know. Interestingly enough, the lighter the roast, the more the caffeine. I guess roasting it takes caffeine out of the coffee. So all these dark roasts and this and that, you think you're getting a whole lot of caffeine? You're not. The lighter the roast. Starbucks, they're notorious for burning their coffee. In my opinion, it's not good. The only coffee that I like from Starbucks is blonde roast. And they often don't have it, so... If you ask them nicely and they're not too busy, well, they'll probably do it anyway, even if they are busy, but they can give you a pour over of a blonde roast. A pour over is a nice way of drinking coffee. It actually takes time. It's not just a process of them pouring out coffee from a very warm vat, that's not the right word. I recently purchased a hand crank burr grinder for coffee beans, and I really like it. You know, sure, it's not as convenient as throwing it in the old electric grinder, but there's something satisfying about grinding your own beans with the sweat of your brow. That's not the expression I meant. And then pouring it out into a filter, then heating up the water on the stove, pouring it in, you know? I mean, essentially, I could be anywhere from like the 1600s to now. I'm not using electronic technology. I could do this while camping in the woods and just heat up a rock or something and then put a pot of water on it or something like that and heat the water up real good and then just keep pouring. So what you do is you want to You want to pour the coffee through once, and then the grounds will sort of bloom up. It's really nice. They'll create this bloom, almost like a puff pastry does. And that's how you know you're getting all the good oils and the flavor of the coffee. Then you let that sort of soak through, and then you give it another pour, maybe a few minutes later. And then after that soaked through, after a few minutes, another pour soaked through. And really, it's a nice, satisfying way of making coffee. I know it's not the fastest, but... And maybe it tastes the same as a Keurig or, you know, one of those instant coffee things, but I don't think it does. I think it tastes much better. And part of the reason might be because I have participated in it. It's like the old egg in the Betty Crocker mix trick that I think I've mentioned every other episode. I don't listen to the episodes after I do them, so I may be repeating myself quite a lot. Interestingly enough, speaking of time and how we perceive time and how to utilize the most time in the day, I was watching this documentary about prisoners who were in solitary confinement, and they said something interesting. When they're in solitary confinement, they really have no way of keeping track of time. So even if it's for a few months, a few years, a few decades, time sort of just turns into forever. Like, there is no time. There is no differentiation. There's no difference between a Monday and a Saturday. A lot of prisoners have a very regimented schedule, and I thought that this was very interesting. They will limit their physical activity to like an hour a day. Maybe right in the morning they'll do up to 1,000 burpees, or, you know, a prison workout, something that you can just do with your own body weight. And they will also either only for an hour read or watch TV or write, and they will limit that time to like 1 or 2 hours during the day because they don't want to become overstimulated with the mind, which I thought is kind of fascinating. I mean, what can end up happening, especially if they don't talk to anybody, is they can start hallucinating voices or visions too, and especially the types of prisons that will put you in the hole, which actually is a dark space, and you have no light, and you get a meal maybe once a day. I mean, these are not prisons in the United States. I was doing research in other countries. They have these kinds of prisons in Russia and places like that. But I think that, you know, without human interaction, we either start creating that in our mind, we create a world, we create a universe for ourselves, or we go mad. Or maybe that's one and the same. I don't actually know what going mad means. I mean, going mad means hearing voices and hallucinating, right? That's someone who hasn't taken any hallucinogenic drugs or, you know, any sort of substance that will make them feel that way. It's just something that naturally happens, some sort of chemical imbalance, or I don't know, one of these things. And they talk about sensory deprivation tanks, that, or like a like a room that has negative decibels, so you, like, even your own voice is swallowed up. You only hear it in your head. It's kind of like wearing headphones. That's a bit like that play I saw a few weeks ago called The Encounter. It's happening in your head. You hear it in your head. It's not an outside sound. It's a sound that's penetrating through your skull. So you can close your eyes and forget that you're not the one creating it, which is, you know, it may take some relaxing. It may take suspense of disbelief or something like that. But it turns into this sort of experience, which is fascinating, you know? It was theater, but was it? I mean, afterwards he said that he was simply the vessel. We were the ones creating it. So is someone that's in solitary confinement simply the vessel? Are they creating their own reality? I remember watching this interview with Charles Manson, and I can't remember the term he used. I think it might have been astral projecting, but he was like, yeah, you know, I'm hardly ever here in this cell. I'm like always gone. I'm in outer space. I'm in the desert. I'm wherever, man. You know, and he kind of just sort of mentioned that he creates a reality that is not the prison cell, which he resides in the reality that we know. So, that's interesting. And then I wonder if in his reality that he creates, time is not a concept. Because if we strip away time, and if we strip away time, we would have to strip away mortality and just assume that it is forever or it's infinite or what have you. Because, you know, how we see as status is we try to fit as many possible things, and the more difficult or complex the things, the better, into the shortest period of time. I remember reading this list of really famous people and what they did before they were 30. It's like, so-and-so founded this company, so-and-so invented the blah, 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 you know. So-and-so wrote several symphonies and blah. And it's just like, wow, okay, great, good for them. You know, they're on their journey. It's good. People can be inspired by that, but you can also be perturbed by it. I mean, you know, if you let yourself, that can sort of freeze you. Say, oh man, I didn't do all this stuff when it took me 10 more years to do this, or I haven't done that yet, you know, constantly trying to put ourselves on someone else's timeline. I mean, that's what any sort of interaction is, right? We have to be on other people's timelines all the time. My dentist, he has time to see me at 11 o'clock tomorrow. No later, no earlier, 11 o'clock. That's when he scheduled out time to see me. That's just an example. I'm not going to the dentist tomorrow, but it does remind me that I should call him and see if he can squeeze me in. All these expressions that we use, the way we prioritize relationships and people and things, it's like, well, this might be more important, but this needs to happen immediately. Like, it may be more important to me that I write a novel, but I need to go into the kitchen and turn off the oven because I'm going to burn the pot roast, right? Anyway, I think that people can come to their own conclusions of what status means. If it means that you're the busiest one in the room, great. You know, look at people like Elon Musk and Steve Jobs when he was alive. I mean, these people did great innovative things. They inspired, they changed parts of the world, parts of our society. You know, there's great political figures who made the world a better place, but when it comes down to it, values are only what we make it. So if I agree, I can either agree or disagree with the social norm and say, well, a person who does this many things in a day or this many things in a lifetime is better than this person who doesn't. Now, you get into that stuff, you get into, like, you know, Zen Buddhism, you get into monks who simply just do one activity, maybe for their entire lives. I mean, there's a type of theater in Japan where characters are passed down from generation to generation. I can't remember what it's called, but that's all they do. They're working towards one thing. Artists who just paint and paint and paint and paint. You know, it's why Picasso can doodle on a napkin in his later years and charge someone an exorbitant price for it, and they said, yeah, but that only took you 2 seconds. And he goes, no, it didn't. It took me 40 years. So I do have to agree that spending time on something creates value. But I think that that spending the time on it is a necessary byproduct of actually doing it. And whatever motivates you to do it, that's up to you. It's up to me. The time spent, that is our own doing. You know, what was it, Malcolm Gladwell's theory that if you spend 10,000 hours on a project, then you become a master at it. Not a project, but a hobby, a career, whatever it is. 10,000 hours is what it takes to be a master. Well, maybe. Or maybe what it takes is resiliency, grit, like we talked about before. The ability to turn failures into learning experiences. There's all sorts of things that factor in. And I believe the more we consciously think about these things and the more we think about why we're doing something or why do we need to do so much or why do we feel guilty if we don't do as much as other people are doing, or all these things, if we question it and really become mindful about it, it becomes an exercise in minimalism. And you know, minimalism can be activities too. It's like, well, you know, maybe I'm at my most when I do 3 solid focused activities in a day. Maybe that's what I can handle. You know, maybe other people can do 8 or 10 or 20. But you know, we're all different. So with that in mind, I do want to be conscious of the time, and I want to end this appropriately. It'll be a good 3/4 of an hour when we're done. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's all the time we have today at Robcast Podcast. Be sure to tune in every week to find the latest Robcast Podcast at officialrobcast.podomatic.com. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at officialrobcast. Thanks so much for listening. Stay alive.